So the body snatcher offered him and mother new identities, transportation to the commune, a cottage, and a plot of land. They took it.
And what did the body snatcher get?
He himself probably didn't get anything. The commune got their ration tickets. They were allowed to keep their money, although they didn't have very much.
What happens if they get caught?
Not a chance. She laughed. The communes provide over half the country's produce. They're really just an unofficial arm of the government. I'm sure the CBI knows exactly where they are. Dad grumbles that it's just a fancy way of being in jail anyhow.
What a weird setup.
Well, it keeps the land farmed.
She pushed her empty dessert plate a symbolic centimeter away from her.
And they're eating better than most people, better than they ever had in the city. Mom knows 100 ways to fix chicken and potatoes.
After dinner, we went to a musical show. The hotel had gotten us tickets to a cultural translation of the old rock opera Hair. The program explained that they had taken some liberties with the original choreography, because back in those days, they didn't allow actual coition on stage. The music was pleasantly old-fashioned, but neither of us was quite old enough to work up any blurry-eyed nostalgia over it. Still, it was much more enjoyable than the movies I'd seen, and some of the physical feats performed were quite inspiring. We slept late the next morning. We dutifully watched the changing of the guard at Buckingham Palace, walked through the British Museum, ate fish and chips, ran up to Stratford-on-Avon and caught the old Vic doing an incomprehensible play about a mad king, and didn't get into any trouble until the day before we were to leave for Lisbon. It was about 2 a.m., and we were tooling our tricycles down a nearly deserted thoroughfare. Turned a corner, and there was a gang of boys beating the hell out of someone. I screeched to the curb and leaped out of my vehicle, firing the shotgun pistol over their heads. It was a girl they were attacking. It was rape. Most of them scattered, but one pulled a pistol out of his coat, and I shot him. I remember trying to aim for his arm. The blast hit his shoulder and ripped off his arm and what seemed to be half of his chest. It flung him 2 meters to the side of a building, and he must have been dead before he hit the ground. The others ran, one of them shooting at me with a little pistol as he went. I watched him trying to kill me for the longest time before it occurred to me to shoot back. I sent one blast way high, and he dove into an alley and disappeared. The girl looked dazedly around, saw the mutilated body of her attacker, and staggered to her feet and ran off screaming, naked from the waist down. I knew I should have tried to stop her, but I couldn't find my voice, and my feet seemed nailed to the sidewalk. A tricycle door slammed, and Mary Gay was beside me.
"What happened?"
she gasped, seeing the dead man.
What was he doing?"
I just stood there, stupefied. I'd certainly seen enough death these past 2 years, but this was a different thing. There was nothing noble in being crushed to death by the failure of some electronic component, or in having your suit fail and freeze you solid, or even dying in a shootout with the incomprehensible enemy. But death seemed natural in that setting. Not on a quaint little street in old-fashioned London. Not for trying to steal what most people would give freely. Mary Gay was pulling my arm.
"We've got to get out of here. They'll brain wipe you."
She was right. I turned and took one step, and fell to the concrete. I looked down at the leg that had betrayed me, and bright red blood was pulsing out of a small hole in my calf. Mary Gay tore a strip of cloth from her blouse and started to bind it. I remember thinking it wasn't a big enough wound to go into shock over, but my ears started to ring, and I got lightheaded, and everything went red and fuzzy. Before I went under, I heard a siren wailing in the distance. Fortunately, the police also picked up the girl, who was wandering down the street a few blocks away. They compared her version of the thing with mine, both of us under hypnosis. They let me go with a stern admonition to leave law enforcement up to professional law enforcers. I wanted to get out of the cities, just put a pack on my back and wander through the woods for a while, get my mind straightened out. So did Mary Gay. But we tried to make arrangements and found that the country was worse than the cities. Farms were practically armed camps, the areas between ruled by nomad gangs who survived by making lightning raids into villages and farms, murdering and plundering for a few minutes, and then fading back into the forest before help could arrive. Still, Britishers called their island the most civilized country in Europe. From what we'd heard about France and Spain and Germany, especially Germany, they were probably right. I talked it over with Mary Gay, and we decided to cut short our tour and go back to the States. We could finish the tour after we'd become acclimated to the 21st century. It was just too much foreignness to take in one dose. The dirigible line refunded most of our money, and we took a conventional suborbital flight back home. The high altitude made my leg throb, though it was nearly healed. They'd made great strides in the treatment of gunshot wounds in the past 20 years. Lots of practice. We split up at Ellis. Her description of commune life appealed to me more than the city. I made arrangements to join her after a week or so, and went back to Washington. Chapter 10. I rang the bell, and a strange woman answered the door, opening it a couple of centimeters and peering through. "Pardon me," I said. "Isn't this Mrs. Mandela's residence?"
"Oh, you must be William."
She closed the door and unfastened the chains and opened it wide.
"Beth, look who's here."
My mother came into the living room from the kitchen, drying her hands on a towel.
"Willie, what are you doing back so soon?"
"Well, it's a long story."
"Sit down, sit down," the other woman said. "Let me get you a drink. Don't start till I get back." "Wait," my mother said. "I haven't even introduced you to. William, this is Rhonda Wilder. Rhonda, William." "I've been so looking forward to meeting you," she said. "Beth has told me all about you. One cold beer, right?"
"Right." She was likable enough, a trim middle-aged woman. I wondered why I hadn't met her before. I asked my mother whether she was a neighbor.
Really more than that, William. She's been my roommate for a couple of years. That's why I had an extra room when you came home. A single person isn't allowed 2 bedrooms.
But why?
I didn't tell you because I didn't want you to feel that you were putting her out of her room while you stayed here. And you weren't, actually. She has... That's right.
Rhonda came in with the beer.
I've got relatives in Pennsylvania out in the country. I can stay with them any time.
Thanks. I took the beer. Actually, I won't be here long. I'm kind of en route to South Dakota. I could find another place to flop.
Oh, no, Rhonda said. I can take the couch.
I was too old-fashioned male chauve to allow that. We discussed it for a minute, and I wound up with the couch. I filled Rhonda in on who Mary Gay was and told them about our disturbing experiences in England, how we came back to get our bearings. I had expected my mother to be horrified that I had killed a man, but she accepted it without comment. Rhonda clucked a little bit about our being out in a city after midnight, especially without a bodyguard. We talked on these and other topics until late at night, when Mother called her bodyguard and went off to work. Something had been nagging at me all night, the way Mother and Rhonda acted toward each other. I decided to bring it out into the open once Mother was gone. Rhonda, I settled down in the chair across from her. I didn't know exactly how to put it. What exactly is your relationship with my mother? She took a long drink. Good friends. She stared at me with a mixture of defiance and resignation. Very good friends. Sometimes lovers. I felt very hollow and lost. My mother? Listen, she continued. You had better stop trying to live in the 90s. This may not be the best of all possible worlds, but you're stuck with it. She crossed and took my hand, almost kneeling in front of me. Her voice was softer. William, look, I'm only 2 years older than you are. That is, I was born 2 years before. What I mean is, I can understand how you feel. Your mother understands, too. Our relationship wouldn't be a secret to anybody else. It's perfectly normal. A lot has changed these 20 years. You've got to change, too. I didn't say anything. She stood up and said firmly, You think because your mother is 60 she's outgrown her need for love? She needs it more than you do, even now, especially now. Accusation in her eyes. Especially now with you coming back from the dead past, reminding her of how old she is, how old I am, 20 years younger. Her voice quavered and cracked, and she ran to her room. I wrote Mother a note saying that Mary Gay had called, an emergency had come up, and I had to go immediately to South Dakota. I called a bodyguard and left. A whining, ozone-leaking, battered old bus let me out of the intersection of a bad road and a worse one. It had taken me an hour to go the 2,000 kilometers to Sioux Falls, 2 hours to get a chopper to Geddes, 150 kilometers away, and 3 hours waiting and jouncing on the dilapidated bus to go the last 12 kilometers to Freehold, an organization of communes where the Potters had their acreage. I wondered if the progression was going to continue, and I would be 4 hours walking down this dirt road to the farm. It was a half hour before I even came to a building. My bag was getting intolerably heavy, and the bulky pistol was chafing my hip. I walked up a stone path to the door of a simple plastic dome and pulled a string that caused a bell to tinkle inside. A peephole darkened. Who is it? Voice muffled by thick wood. Stranger, asking directions. Ask. I couldn't tell whether it was a woman or a child. I'm looking for the Potter's farm. Just a second. Footsteps went away and came back. Down the road 1.9 clicks, lots of potatoes and green beans on your right. You probably smell the chickens. Thanks. If you want a drink, we got a pump out back. Can't let you in without my husband's at home. I understand. Thank you. The water was metallic tasting, but wonderfully cool. I wouldn't know a potato or green bean plant if it stood up and took a bite out of my ankle, but I knew how to walk a half-meter step. So I resolved to count to 3,800 and take a deep breath. I supposed I could tell the difference between the smell of chicken manure and the absence thereof. At 3,650, there was a rutted path leading to a complex of plastic domes and rectangular buildings, apparently made of sod. There was a pen enclosing a small population explosion of chickens. They had a smell, but it wasn't strong. Halfway down the path, a door opened, and Mary Gay came running out, wearing one tiny wisp of cloth. After a slippery but gratifying greeting, she asked what I was doing here so early. Oh, my mother had friends staying with her. I didn't want to put them out. Suppose I should have called. Indeed, you should have.
save you a long, dusty walk. But we've got plenty of room. Don't worry about that.
She took me inside to meet her parents, who greeted me warmly and made me feel definitely overdressed. Their faces showed their age, but their bodies had no sag and few wrinkles. Since dinner was an occasion, they let the chickens live and instead opened a can of beef, steaming it along with a cabbage and some potatoes. To my plain tastes, it was equal to most of the gourmet fare we'd had on the dirigible and in London. Over coffee and goat cheese, they apologized for not having wine. The commune would have a new vintage out in a couple of weeks. I asked what kind of work I could do.
"Well," Mr. Potter said, "I don't mind telling you that your coming here is a godsend. We've got 5 acres that are just sitting out there, fallow, because we don't have enough hands to work them. You can take the plow tomorrow and start breaking up an acre at a time."
"More potatoes, Daddy?" Mary Gay asked.
"No, no, not this season. Soybeans. Cash crop and good for the soil. And we'll, at night we all take turns standing guard. With 4 of us, we ought to be able to do a lot more sleeping."
He took a big slurp of coffee.
"Now, what else?"
"Richard," Mrs. Potter said, "tell him about the greenhouse."
"That's right, yes, the greenhouse. The commune has a 2-acre greenhouse down about a click from here, by the recreation center, mostly grapes and tomatoes. Everybody spends 1 morning or 1 afternoon a week there. Why don't you children go down there tonight? Show Will the nightlife in fabulous Freehold. Sometimes you can get a real exciting game of checkers going."
"Oh, Daddy, it's not that bad."
"Actually, it isn't. They've got a fair library and a coin-op terminal to the Library of Congress. Mary Gay tells me you're a reader. That's good."
"Sounds fascinating."
"It did. But what about guard?"
"No problem. Mrs. Potter, April, and I'll take the first 4 hours."
"Oh," he said, standing.
"Let me show you the setup."
We went out back to the tower, a sandbag hut on stilts, climbed up a rope ladder through a hole in the middle of the hut.
"A little crowded in here with 2,
Richard said.
"Have a seat."
There was an old piano stool beside the hole in the floor. I sat on it.
"It's handy to be able to see all the field without getting a crick in your neck. Just don't keep turning in the same direction all the time."
He opened a wooden crate and uncovered a sleek rifle wrapped in oily rags.
"Recognize this?"
"Sure." I'd had to sleep with one in basic training. "Army Standard Issue T-16. Semi-automatic 12-caliber tumblers. Where the hell did you get it?"
"Commune went to a government auction. It's an antique now, son."
He handed it to me, and I snapped it apart. Clean. Too clean.
"Has it ever been used?" "Not in almost a year. Ammo costs too much for target practice. Take a couple of practice shots, though. Convince yourself that it works."
I turned on the scope and just got a washed-out bright green. "Set for nighttime." Clicked it back to log 0, set the magnification at 10, reassembled it.
"Mary Gay didn't want to try it out. Said she'd had her fill of that. I didn't press her, but a person's got to have confidence in their tools."
I clicked off the safety and found a clod of dirt that the rangefinder said was between 100 and 120 meters away, set it at 110, rested the barrel of the rifle on the sandbags, centered the clod in the crosshairs, and squeezed. The round hissed out and kicked up dirt about 5 centimeters low.
"Fine."
I reset it for night use and safetied it and handed it back. "What happened a year ago?" He wrapped it up carefully, keeping the rags away from the eyepiece.
"Had some jumpers come in, fired a few rounds, and scared him away."
"All right. What's a jumper?"
"Yeah, you wouldn't know."
He shook out a tobacco cigarette and passed me the box. I don't know why they don't just call 'em thieves. That's what they are. Murderers, too, sometimes. They know that a lot of the commune members are pretty well off. If you raise cash crops, you get to keep half the cash. Besides, a lot of our members were prosperous when they joined. Anyhow, the jumpers take advantage of our relative isolation. They come out from the city and try to sneak in, usually hit one place and run. Most of the time they don't get this far in, but the farm's closer to the road. We hear gunfire every couple of weeks, usually just scaring off kids. If it keeps up, a siren goes off, and the commune goes on alert.
Doesn't sound fair to the people living close to the road.
There are compensations. They only have to donate half as much of their crop as the rest of us do, and they're issued heavier weapons.
Mary Gay and I took the family's two bicycles and pedaled down to the recreation center. I only fell off twice, negotiating the bumpy road in the dark. It was a little livelier than Richard had described it. A young nude girl was dancing sensuously to an assortment of homemade drums near the far side of the dome. Turned out she was still in school. It was a project for a cultural relativity class. Most of the people there, in fact, were young and therefore still in school. They considered it a joke, though. After you had learned to read and write and could pass the Class 1 literacy test, you only had to take one course per year, and some of those you could pass just by signing up. So much for the 18 years compulsory education they had startled us with at Stargate. Other people were playing board games, reading, watching the girl gyrate, or just talking. There was a bar that served soya, coffee, or thin homemade beer. Not a ration ticket to be seen. All made by the commune or purchased outside with commune tickets. We got into a discussion about the war with a bunch of people who knew Mary Gay and I were veterans. It's hard to describe their attitude, which was pretty uniform. They were angry in an abstract way that it took so much tax money to support. They were convinced that the Torrens would never be any danger to Earth, but they all knew that nearly half the jobs in the world were associated with the war, and if it stopped, everything would fall apart. I thought everything was in shambles already, but then I hadn't grown up in this world, and they had never known peacetime. We went home about midnight, and Mary Gay and I each stood 2 hours guard. By the middle of the next morning, I was wishing I'd gotten a little more sleep. The plow was a big blade on wheels with two handles for steering, atomic-powered. Not very much power, though, enough to move it forward at a slow crawl if the blade was in soft earth. Needless to say, there was little soft earth in the unused 5 acres. The plow would go a few centimeters, get stuck, freewheel until I put some back into it, then move a few more centimeters. I finished a tenth of an acre the first day, and eventually got it up to a fifth of an acre a day. It was hard, hardening work, but pleasant. I had an ear clip that piped music to me, old tapes from Richard's collection, and the sun browned me all over. I was beginning to think I could live that way forever. Mary Gay and I were reading up at the recreation center one evening when we heard faint gunfire down by the road. We decided it'd be smart to get back to the house. We were less than halfway there when firing broke out all along our left, on a line that seemed to extend from the road to far past the recreation center, a coordinated attack. We had to abandon the bikes and crawl on hands and knees in the drainage ditch by the side of the road, bullets hissing over our heads. A heavy vehicle rumbled by, shooting left and right. It took a good 20 minutes to crawl home. We passed 2 farmhouses that were burning brightly. I was glad ours didn't have any wood. I noticed there was no return fire coming from our tower, but didn't say anything.
There were two dead strangers in front of the house as we rushed inside. April was lying on the floor, still alive, but bleeding from 100 tiny fragment wounds. The living room was rubble and dust. Someone must have thrown a bomb through a door or window. I left Mary Gay with her mother and ran out back to the tower. The ladder was pulled up, so I had to shinny up one of the stilts. Richard was sitting slumped over the rifle. In the pale green glow from the scope, I could see a perfectly round hole above his left eye. A little blood had trickled down the bridge of his nose and dried. I laid his body on the floor and covered his head with my shirt. I filled my pockets with clips and took the rifle back to the house. Mary Gay had tried to make her mother comfortable. They were talking quietly. She was holding my shotgun pistol and had another gun on the floor beside her. When I came in, she looked up and nodded soberly. Not crying. April whispered something, and Mary Gay asked, "Mother wants to know whether... Daddy had a hard time of it. She knows he's dead." "No, I'm sure he didn't feel anything." "That's good." "It's something. I should keep my mouth shut." "It is good, yes." I checked the doors and windows for an effective vantage point. I couldn't find any place that wouldn't allow a whole platoon to sneak up behind me. "I'm going to go outside and get on top of the house." Couldn't go back to the tower. "Don't you shoot unless somebody gets inside. Maybe they'll think the place is deserted." By the time I had clambered up to the sod roof, the heavy truck was coming back down the road. Through the scope, I could see that there were 5 men on it, 4 in the cab and 1 who was on the open bed, cradling a machine gun, surrounded by loot. He was crouched between 2 refrigerators, but I had a clear shot at him. Held my fire, not wanting to draw attention. The truck stopped in front of the house, sat for a minute, and turned in. The window was probably bulletproof, but I sighted on the driver's face and squeezed off around. He jumped as it ricocheted, whining, leaving an opaque star on the plastic, and the man in back opened up. A steady stream of bullets hummed over my head. I could hear them thumping into the sandbags of the tower. He didn't see me. The truck wasn't 10 meters away when the shooting stopped. He was evidently reloading, hidden behind the refrigerator. I took careful aim, and when he popped up to fire, I shot him in the throat. The bullet being a tumbler, it exited through the top of his skull. The driver pulled the truck around in a long arc so that when it stopped, the door to the cab was flush with the door of the house. This protected them from the tower and also from me, though I doubted they yet knew where I was. A T-16 makes no flash and very little noise. I kicked off my shoes and stepped cautiously onto the top of the cab, hoping the driver would get out on his side. Once the door opened, I could fill the cab with ricocheting bullets. No good. The far door, hidden from me by the roof's overhang, opened first. I waited for the driver and hoped that Mary Gay was well hidden. I shouldn't have worried. There was a deafening roar, then another and another. The heavy truck rocked with the impact of thousands of tiny flechettes. One short scream that the second shot ended. I jumped from the truck and ran around to the back door. Mary Gay had her mother's head on her lap, and someone was crying softly. I went to them, and Mary Gay's cheeks were dry under my palms. "Good work, dear." She didn't say anything. There was a steady, heavy dripping sound from the door, and the air was acrid with smoke and the smell of fresh meat. We huddled together until dawn. I had thought April was sleeping, but in the dim light her eyes were wide open and filmed. Her breath came in shallow rasps. Her skin was gray parchment and dried blood. She didn't answer when we talked to her. A vehicle was coming up the road, so I took the rifle and went outside. It was a dump truck with a white sheet draped over one side, and a man standing in the back with a megaphone repeating, "Wounded! Wounded!" I waved, and the truck came in. They took April out on a makeshift litter and told us which hospital they were going to. We wanted to go along, but there was simply no room. The bed of the truck was covered with people in various stages of disrepair. Mary Gay didn't want to go back inside because it was getting light enough to see the men she had killed so completely. I went back in to get some cigarettes and forced myself to look. It was messy enough, but just didn't disturb me that much. That bothered me, to be confronted with a pile of human hamburger and mainly notice the flies and ants and smell. Death is so much neater in space. We buried her father behind the house, and when the truck came back with April's small body wrapped in a shroud, we buried her beside him. The commune sanitation truck came by a little later, and gas-masked men took care of the jumpers' bodies. We sat in the baking sun, and finally Mary Gay wept for a long time, silently. Chapter 11. We got off the plane at Dulles and found a monorail to Columbia. It was a pleasingly diverse jumble of various kinds of buildings arranged around a lake, surrounded by trees. All of the buildings were connected by slidewalk to the largest place, a Fuller Dome with stores and schools and offices. We could have taken the enclosed slidewalk to Mom's place, but instead walked alongside it in the good, cold air that smelled of fallen leaves. People slid by on the other side of the plastic, carefully not staring. Mom didn't answer her door, but she'd given me an entry card. Mom was asleep in the bedroom, so Mary Gay and I settled in the living room and read for a while. We were startled suddenly by a loud fit of coughing from the bedroom. I raced over and knocked on the door.
"William? I didn't..."
Coughing.
"Come in. I didn't know you were..."
She was propped up in bed, the light on, surrounded by various nostrums. She looked ghastly, pale and lined. She lit a joint, and it seemed to quell the coughing.
"When did you get in? I didn't know..."
"Just a few minutes ago. How long is this... Have you been..."
"Oh, it's just a bug I picked up after Rhonda went to see her kids. I'll be fine in a couple of days."
She started coughing again, drank some thick red liquid from a bottle. All of her medicine seemed to be the commercial patent variety. "Have you seen a doctor?"
"Doctor? Heavens no, Willie. They don't have..." "It's not serious. Don't..."
"Not serious? At 84. For Christ's sake, Mother." I went to the phone in the kitchen and with some difficulty managed to get the hospital. A plain girl in her 20s formed in the cube.
"Nurse Donaldson, General Services."
She had a fixed smile, professional sincerity. But then everybody smiled. "My mother needs to be looked at by a doctor. She has a..."
"Name and number, please?"
"Beth Mandela." I spelled it.
"What number?"
"Medical services number, of course." She smiled. I called into Mom and asked her what her number was.
"She says she can't remember." "That's all right, sir. I'm sure I can find her records."
She turned her smile to a keyboard beside her and punched out a code.
"Beth Mandela?"
she said, her smile turning quizzical.
"You're her son? She must be in her 80s.